So I'll conclude by a rapid story of Paul and his letters. The dates are all approximate, but they're the best I can do for you. And any book you read won't vary from it a lot, but there will be slight variations for a whole host of reasons which would be foolish for me to go into. So all I'm giving you now is a probable chronology, sometimes quite accurate, sometimes it might miss by a year, but all of it can be reasoned to. It's not just thought up. It could be. It's solidly based on investigation, at any rate, though there would be few loose ends. The most probable date for Jesus' death is 33 AD in Jerusalem. 30 is another possibility. I'll take it as 33. 34, in other words, within a year of Jesus' death, Paul, on the road to Damascus, so his persecution of the church didn't last long, but it was pretty vigorous. On the road to Damascus, Paul has his conversion. He tells us in his letter to the Galatians that for 3 years he spent in Arabia, is his word from it. He's talking about present Jordan here to the south of Damascus in that area. In 37, that is 3 years after his conversion, he had to be lowered in a basket out of Damascus because of the Jewish and because the Nabataean king, Aretas IV, his governor, was after him. It's a bit complicated. And then for the first time after conversion, he went in the year 37 to Jerusalem, but he tells us himself in his letter to the Galatians he was only there for a fortnight, and he spoke only with Peter particularly and one or other leader of the community. Peter, James and John, the three that keep appearing in the Gospels regularly. From 37, the Christian community, hustled Paul out of Jerusalem. He was too dangerous, apparently, and perhaps pretty fiery still, and he had this new message that meant everything to him, but it was all right for him to be careering through Jerusalem, brilliantly disposing of all the arguments, but all the other people were a little bit, like life was a bit uncomfortable, so it looks like they packed him up and thought, well, you'd do better at home. So they sent him on a boat back to Tarsus. And between 37 and 35, he tells us himself in that area, he doesn't give the dates, he was in the area of Cilicia and Syria. Now, Syria and Cilicia were the same province at that time. They weren't later, but they were then. They were the area of covered both. So he's somewhere in this area up in the northeastern corner of the Mediterranean. In 45, is my presumption, Barnabas, who introduced Paul when he first came to Jerusalem here back in 37 to the community and got them to accept him because they couldn't believe their main opponent was now one of them, Barnabas and Paul were asked to take some money which had been collected down to Jerusalem because they were suffering from a famine in the time of Claudius. And we're told that in the Acts of the Apostles. The next year, 47, having come back from Jerusalem and this mission, Barnabas, Paul and Mark head off. And Barnabas is the leader of the group, so he goes to his own home country, which is the island of Cyprus. Sensible place to start. So he goes off here, Salamis, by boat, then round here, comes to Paphos. That's where they met Sergius Paulus, or Paul was the surname, the family name of this, consul. They met him there, and then they headed off on boat here to Perga, then they went up to Antioch, here in the central part of modern Turkey. And then they did their journey, Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, then they returned. This is through the years 47 to 48, and that's where he met, converted the mother and grandmother of Timothy, and then he comes down here and straight back to Antioch and announced what had happened on this mission journey. The area they went through that I've just mentioned is in the southern part of the Roman province of Galatia. And it's my now opinion, though it wasn't when I wrote my last book, you can learn, that Paul's letter to the Galatians is written to the southern. There's an argument. Was it to the real, to the territory of Galatia, where the Gauls were, the Celts, or was it to the Roman province of Galatia that he wrote? The argument is still going on, but the more we find out, or the more I found out, I had to change my mind. I think the evidence is weighted towards him writing to the southern part of Galatia, in which case that helps the dating of it. My suggestion to you is that when he got back to Antioch, we know from the Acts of the Apostles, a group of Christian Jews who were very faithful Jews, faithful inverted commas, faithful to their habits as Jews and to their practices as Jews, to circumcision, to kosher food, to all the things that they grew up with, they thought Paul was playing fast and loose with all this. And so they came up here and there was an argument going on in Antioch. It looks as though the same people also went to Galatia and were troubling these new converts by saying, no, 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 no. You've got to be circumcised. You must do this. You've got, because it's all in the, you know, and they quote the Bible at them. It's easy enough to do. And people thought, oh, well, you know. And then Paul, when he gets back to Antioch, has this debate, gets news back from Galatia that they too are going back and thinking they have to become Jews now, or the Jews are thinking they made a mistake. He writes this tirade to them, loving, powerful letter, I think his earliest letter to the Galatians in 48. In 49, he comes down to Jerusalem for the big debate about all this. Where does it all fit? And the debate is brilliant, beautiful, faithful. Peter gets up. He's the prophet. The decision is made by James. Don't give James a bad name, even though history tries to do it. James, the brother of the Lord, who was the leading presbyter in the Christian community and had the administrative control. Peter didn't. It's not a bad idea, you know. Peter's the kind of leader, but he's not the one making the decisions. Kind of like that. It's not bad, is it? Too much power in one place can be a problem. And so Peter gets up and just says, look, this is what happened to me, and you all know about it. And you know the story from the Acts back in Caesarea, and tells his story again and how he was converted. He thought you had to do all this too, but he realized he was wrong. So, and when Peter finishes speaking, it's so powerful, James gets up and says, well, you've heard Cephas, so that's it. I judge that we shouldn't ask the Galatians to do it, or the Antioch group, we shouldn't ask them to do anything that's not expected of Gentiles living in the land. Now, they must do that for social reasons. They mustn't eat, you know, certain kind of food, because it's offensive to the Jews. And if you're going to have a community, they've got to be respectful to the Jewish majority. And that's a very sensible thing. And Paul was there, and I bet Paul thought, okay, he argued with Peter about it. He wasn't in favour of it when he was in Antioch, but Paul can learn. Jesus learnt. You're learning, I hope. So Paul, I reckon he learnt a lot back there from this debate. Gave a lot and learnt a lot. So that's the Council of Jerusalem, 49 AD. And at the end of it, he goes back to Antioch, and then they decide to set off on another journey to revisit these towns. They do it by land. This time he takes with him one of the men that came up from Jerusalem with the letter from the Jerusalem community giving these instructions about that they weren't free, which is wonderfully open, liberal, trusting, Christian decision that they made. Difficult, but they made it. And they said, the people that troubled you in Antioch, and by and definition also in Galatia, these people did not come with our authority. Often people go claiming the authority of the Pope or the Archbishop of Canterbury or the local church, and they don't have it. And people can blame the institution for me doing things that the institution says I shouldn't do. That's a bit tough on the institution. So no, they didn't have their authority. So they set off. Now this time he goes through here and is heading towards Ephesus, obviously, and he was told. Then he is told by the Holy Spirit. He doesn't go there. He goes north, and then he's heading somewhere else to Bithynia. But he ends up in Troas there. And there he has a vision of a European, a Macedonian, saying, come to us. So somehow in prayer he discerned really deeply that he was being called to go to Europe. So he does. We're in the year 49. He heads off from Troas by boat, lands or passes Samothrace, this island, ends at Neapolis. Neapolis is just new city. Naples is Neapolis. Napoli, just the Italian for. So there's a lot of Neapolises around there, dotted through the Roman Empire, and here's one of them here. And that's where he joined the Via Ignatia. The Via Ignatia heads towards Rome, becomes the Via Appia. So maybe he was thinking, I'm going to Rome, because he tells us a lot later, I've been wanting to go to Rome for a long time. So he goes to there, he has trouble in Philippi, which we've read about. He then goes to Thessalonica, also on the Via Ignatia, but then he has to leave the Via, it becomes too dangerous. And he heads up into the hills at Berea. The people from Thessalonica chase him there, so he's hustled away by night, gets a little boat, finds his way down, ends up in Athens briefly, and then from Athens goes to Corinth. And he chose his place as well. Corinth is the hub of this whole area because all the boats coming in from Rome come here into the Gulf of Corinth, and then the Saronic Gulf, and there's only about 3 or 4 kilometres between them. They used to drag the boats, how they did it, I suppose, on rolling logs and all kinds of ways, middle-sized boats. They'd drag them across here. Then they could go all the way to Ephesus in the east. Or they had to risk going right round here, which was much more dangerous, and many boats got, and pirates and all the rest of it. So that's where he settled, in Corinth in the year 50. Now we've got a date we can trust. All the others are pretty well okay too, but this date we know because Gallio was there, and we know when Gallio was in Corinth, and because he met Aquila and Priscilla there. That's where they met them, and they'd recently been sent out from Rome, and 49 is the date given historically, most probably correct, for the edict of Claudius sending certain Jews, Jewish Christians as well, out of a synagogue in Rome because of the trouble over Christos, over Christ. So there was some problem going on. So we've got a pretty good date here. That's 50. He's there for a year and a half. From there, he writes 2 letters back to Thessalonica, the 2 letters to the Thessalonians. 50-51. He leaves in the spring of 51, so that's May, April, May, when the boating season opens up. And that's when Gallio left too, so possibly he decided Gallio's leaving would be a good time for him to leave, because Gallio had said, I'm not going to judge this matter. And Gallio was Seneca's brother, by the way, the famous Seneca. And he was a noble. A lot of the Roman were, of course, and a lot of the Roman law. The only law and order any of these places knew were when Rome came. Now, it was imposed bloody in the war and, you know, all that, but they were often welcomed as liberators too because they at least created some order. Why? For economic reasons. Does that ring a bell anywhere? So, Corinth, he then headed off from Corinth in spring of 51, and he took with him Prisca and Aquila to Ephesus, left them there, and then journeyed all the way down here to Caesarea, Jerusalem, up to, and then back to Ephesus. So that was a year's journey, half by sea and half by land, and he arrives back in Ephesus about the year 53, and he's there for 3 years in the hall of Tyrannus and opening up in this whole Asian area. That's Asia there. Ephesus. And that, from there, as far as he rode back to Corinth, boats were all the time plying that sea between those two, rode back to his first letter to the Corinthians, and he also wrote across here, not very far, to Colossae and Philemon. My suggestion is they both come from that same period. In 55, he headed north, and we find him at Troas. Then he goes for the winter of 55-56, winter is over our Christmas period, of course, end of the year and beginning of the year, he seems to have written some from somewhere before the winter, because you couldn't travel in winter, he met Titus there, somewhere up in Macedonia, and hurriedly wrote off 2 Corinthians chapter 1 to 9 to him to go back and organise the collection. A lot of trouble with Corinthians, which we don't have to worry about now. Then, in the next year, that's 56, that's when he went to Macedonia, you've got it here anyhow, and he possibly went over to Dalmatia himself, to Illyricum, over here on the west coast of Macedonia, what we'd call Albania, southern part. He went over there, and then from there he wrote the second part of the second letter to the Corinthians as an appendix, chapter 10 to 13, back to Corinth. Anyhow, he arrives in Corinth just before the winter of 56-57 and spends the winter there at the house of Gaius, and from there, let's say January 57, he writes his letter back to the Romans, telling them that his time in the East is finished and he wants to go to Rome. However, he's first of all got to take the collection to Jerusalem. So he's about to head off by boat to Jerusalem, and he discovers a Jewish plot to kill him on the boat or somehow. So he escapes by land, presumably, and goes up, hurries up through here, meets Luke at Philippi, comes around here probably by boat to Troas, then across there by land, and then he goes to Miletus, which is just here south of Ephesus. And that's where we have that beautiful sermon, his last sermon in the East, to the presbyters from Ephesus. He calls them down there. He doesn't want to go to Ephesus. He wants to get, we're told, to Jerusalem by Pentecost. Then he heads off to Jerusalem and ends up in prison in Caesarea. He's in prison there for 2 years, for reasons that I think you're pretty familiar with. And finally, from there, I suggested he wrote Ephesians, which is the copy of the letter to the Gentiles, which is in the archives of Ephesus, though it's clearly not written to Ephesus alone. It's a general letter, and I think his most beautiful one, to be quite honest, free of any debate and just beautifully on what Jesus is about. And he's got time to do it when he's here at Caesarea. Then he appeals to go to Rome, and he does. And in 59, taken by boat along here to avoid, they set off a bit late, or the weather came in early, very slow progress round here, thinking of stopping at Crete, but they can't stop at Crete because where they land couldn't, at Fair Havens, we're told, couldn't take, so they, against Paul's advice, they got a boat, they were going to go round here to a much better harbour, which they could, at Phoenix, here on the island of Crete, but the wind blew them out, and you know the story of that. They came, however, down here and ended up in 59-60 that winter on the island of Malta. When the next spring came and the boats were open again, they got another boat, because their boat was wrecked. Another wheat boat that's coming, plenty of boats coming up from Alexandria area. They caught one of those, took them to Syracuse, Rhegium, put in at the main harbour on the west coast of Italy called Puteoli, and because Rome didn't have a big harbour then, they had the Ostia, the mouth of the, but it was too small for these big boats at that stage. And then he was taken by land through the Forum of Appius, the Three Taverns, and then to Rome, and arrives in Rome under guard, under house arrest, between the year 60 and 62. Sometime during that 2 years is when I suggested to you he wrote to the Philippians. And that's just to indicate how close Philippi is. And the Via Appia and the Via Ignatia, there's just a small crossing from Brindisi over here to Apollonius, or a bit north of that. And Via Ignatia goes across to Philippi. So there was constant traffic between those two places too. So that's when he wrote his Philippians, I suggest to you. At the end of that time, 62, when he was released because they couldn't sustain any charge against him, or because it wasn't brought against him, he was just waiting under house arrest, and by Roman law 2 years is all you can do for that, so he was, as history tells us, Eusebius and others, he was freed. Did he go to Spain in that time? He may have. We've already seen Clement say that he went to the furthest limits of the West. He may have gone to Spain, which was his dream. When he went to Spain, he may have discovered that he couldn't do much because they didn't talk Greek. They talked either their own languages or Latin. So that was a problem because he knew Greek and he'd been speaking Greek everywhere else. Maybe it was a language problem. Maybe it just wasn't successful. Maybe he couldn't get permission from the military generals. Who knows? But if he did go, it couldn't have been for too long. And he would then find him over here somewhere in the East again, writing to 1 Timothy, Titus. Then he's caught in prison again, back to Rome, and from Rome he writes his second letter in about the year 66. So we're talking about 30 years, really, of missionary life of this quite extraordinary man. And if I had to think quickly, which I have to do, what would be the two main things I'd think about Paul? Well, the main thing is he must have had an extraordinarily beautiful experience of Jesus, because clearly that was his love, and totally convincing. Now, that says a lot about Jesus. It also says a lot about Paul, Paul's openness to the experience, because he was a passionate young man and he loved the truth. And I think that'll get any of us through. And it's because he loved the truth so passionately that he was a persecutor of the Christians, for no other reason. But when he saw that the truth, I am Jesus and you're hurting me, when he saw what the truth was, he grabbed it with equal passion and never let it go. Because the truth was about love. And the truth was about universality. That's the big thing in Paul. This, well, obviously by his life, no one's excluded. And that was a great release to Paul, as it is to any of us, isn't it? To know that nobody's outside God's love. And once you see it, of course it's true. There's only one God. Has to be like that. So he had that terrific passion. And the other thing that came to me through my own study was, I knew it, I think, well, I did know it here, but an absolute conviction that Paul never ever identified himself as anything but a Jew that was faithful to the traditions of Judaism. Really faithful. And in being faithful, he had to go against the vast majority of Jews. So in being faithful, he had to put offside, or no, that's not the right way, he found himself being persecuted by, accused by, threatened by, hated by his co-religionists, who were not as committed to the truth, maybe that's it, and who were so determined to hold on to what they'd known, that they, the leaders I'll talk about, most of the people didn't know what they're doing, I guess, that they, as they crucified Jesus, they kept persecuting Paul. And here we've already seen in his last letter talking about his ancestors. And so he had the courage to be truthful to the end. As he says, I fought the fight.